20 years ago this month, in August of 2007, the Pokagon Band of Potawatomi Indians opened their Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo, you know, just a hop, skip, and a jump from Blue Chip Casino in Michigan City. And even though Blue Chip had done everything that they felt that they could to insulate itself from the onset of competition there, you know, they built that new hotel and added some other ancillary facilities, upgraded their own casino. They immediately saw about a 30% long-term decrease in activity at the Michigan City Casino as a result of the Pokagon's opening this nice new facility nearby. And the other casinos in Indiana, and Blue Chip in particular, are going to be hurting from the opening of the new Pokagon Casino in South Bend next spring.
When you talk about a revenue stream being so tenuous, we obviously figure that it's because not only of the economy and people have to have extra money at their disposal to be able to go to the boats or to go to the casino if it's inland, but it's much more than that. There's a revenue stream that affects the entire economic cycle, I guess, within a community, doesn't it? And it just goes beyond the casino itself, doesn't it?
Right. You've got jobs at each casino, you know, perhaps 1,000 or more jobs at any given property that, you know, are generally filled by people from the local community. You've got those people spending their payroll in those local communities. And then you've got the tax dollars that come in to the communities and the host counties. And you've got the money that goes to the state to pay for state needs. And you are not going to see that kind of money, with the exception of perhaps a local payroll from the Pokagon Band of Potawatomi Indians in South Bend, because they're not going to be paying any kind of state or local taxes. They're going to be making a payment of 2% of their net revenues to the city of South Bend, but nothing to St. Joseph County and nothing to the state of Indiana. They are not taxed by the state of Indiana on any of their gaming income. And the state has no control over their gaming activities in South Bend. And at the same time, the Michigan City Casino, as are all of the other casinos in the state, are taxed basically at a marginal rate of about 33-34% on their wagering income. And then they also will have to pay admissions taxes on each patron through next July, and then that kind of gets tucked into the wagering tax. And they have to pay all their old regular state and local sales taxes. The Pokagons are not subject to the same kinds of taxation, and they've got some other advantages. They can open up restaurants and gas stations and other facilities like that and have tax advantages over the other local businesses. So that's a reason for people to come and visit. And if the Blue Chip Casino, for example, has to be taxed on money that they spend on their promotional activities, their free coin or free play or what you may want to call that, the Pokagons don't. So they've got a better ability to market themselves cheaper. And make no mistake about it, they know this market and they are great operators. You know, they have done a tremendous job with the casino in New Buffalo, and they have built up a tremendous local customer list. You know, they know everybody who might be ready to gamble in the new casino from Ohio to Illinois. And they're going to be targeting those people.
Now, Ed, do you think that we may see some concessions from the Potawatomi tribe that could, in turn, if things go well, produce more income? That'll come back in turn. You mentioned the fact that St. Joseph County isn't going to get any share of the revenues from the casino, and the state of Indiana is not be able to get very much, I'm sure. Do you think there may be some changes that the Governor Eric Holcomb and the lawmakers might see to?
Well, the Pokagons are going to open with what's called Class 2 gaming right now, and that won't be really noticeable to the patron, with the exception of the fact that they would not have live table games, that they will have slot-like machines, and they'll basically be indiscernible from the regular slot machines that you see at the commercial casinos to the average patron. Now, the Pokagons will probably be doing this because they want to show that the state that they don't need the state's help, or they don't need anything from the state, and they shouldn't have to make any concessions in order to get something from the state. But if they can can negotiate from a position of power and say, okay, well, in order to get live table games, we'll give you, you know, this particular amount of income or whatever. They can do that if they can show that they're bringing in just a really tremendous income stream and hurting the other casinos and hurting state revenue as a result.
Now,
but the state's going to have to make concessions in order to get anything from them. You know, the state may have to say, okay, well, if we allow internet wagering, we'll prohibit the commercial casinos from doing it, but you can do it. Or we won't locate any kind of other commercial casino or VGT operation or OTV or whatever within, you know, 100 miles of you. There are all kinds of things that the Pokagons could be looking for in something like that. And the state has retained a law firm from Michigan that's very experienced in Indian gaming law and in compact negotiation, just kind of advised the governor's office on what they can do, what to watch for, and what they should do.
We're talking, pardon me, we're talking with Ed Feigenbaum, who is the editor and publisher of Indiana Gaming Insights newsletter about the Potawatomi Indian casino that is being built in the South Bend area and the impact it's going to have on all of the gaming operations in Indiana, especially here in Northwest Indiana, being so close here. What kind of fears do you have looking at all of this that the communities that currently have casinos in the Port Counties and as well as in Lake County, what we're going to face in trying to deal with this threat?
Well, the biggest thing is the loss of tax income and the potential loss of jobs at the existing casinos. You know, this is a tremendous boon for the city of South Bend in particular. You know, they're getting some money in. They're getting a lot of new jobs. They're already getting the benefit of all the construction jobs and the booster effect there in the community from that. And it will be an extreme positive for the city of South Bend, but it comes at the expense of their neighbors.
I understand, too, that other Indian tribes besides the Potawatomi Indians are very interested, of course, in getting casino operations that they haven't had before. And I guess there's even the Miami Nation in Indiana, which is based in Peru, as well as in other states that are going to try to get land together for a casino. Do you think that there may be some other states that might want to join with Indiana, perhaps in trying to find ways to deal with this or at least be prepared for what they're going to face?
Yeah, that's going to be a tough road to hoe, but it'll also be difficult for some of these other tribes to find themselves the kind of land that they need in Indiana under the law to be able to do something like this. And this isn't really new. You know, we've seen this going back to really 1994, mm-hmm. when the casinos had been authorized in 1993, and Gary had the first two shots the table there, and we're supposed to be able to get a casino going in Gary before any other casino, but they had difficulty in trying to assemble the right land for it, and the mayor and the casino companies, Trump and Majestic Star, didn't quite see eye to eye, and the mayor ended up getting a contact from the Miami tribe of Oklahoma to try and put a casino in Gary, saying, oh, well, we've got something we can kind of claim as tribal lands there. And then the Miami Nation, Miami Tribe of Oklahoma, also tried a couple of years later to put something in Vigo County, and actually West Terre Haute, saying that they had ancient tribal land there as well. But the problem is that you have to have, particularly under the way that federal law works now, you have to have your own tribal land, reservation land in a particular state. And the Bureau of Indian Affairs, particularly the Trump administration, is not going to look too kindly on granting the authority of a tribe to open a casino on something outside of its ancestral tribal land.
Yeah.
You know, that was a little bit easier under the Obama administration, but you know, this president in particular has had experience with opposing Native American gaming in the state of New York, where it potentially bumped up against his commercial casinos in New Jersey and some plans that he had had at the time for expanding gaming under the Trump label in upstate New York. So it's not going to be an easy task for any tribe to come in at this point and get approval for gaming in Indiana beyond the Pokagon.
Well, I wanted to take our time left here and a chance to talk today about a new report that's come out from the Hoosier Lottery about revenues as we finish up, I guess, the year-end report. Tell us about that, please.
Yeah, the fiscal year 2017 lottery sales numbers are in, and sales are down, but the profits are up. You know, tale of two cities here. The sales still managed to top the $1 billion mark, and that's, you know, that should kind of make everybody shake their heads. Wow, you know, $1 billion just for lottery sales, and this is the fourth consecutive year in which the lottery topped that $1 billion mark, and it was also the second best sales year ever for the lottery. But this was also the first time that we saw sales decrease since the lottery contracted with their private operations manager with IGT Indiana back in fiscal year 2013. So that may be of some concern. But when you look at the numbers, you kind of take a deeper dive into things, Chris, it becomes pretty clear that the reason that sales were down in fiscal year 2017 was because the Powerball jackpots just weren't quite as spectacular as they were in the previous fiscal year when you had that world record $1 point something billion jackpot, and everybody just kind of went crazy going after that. You had pretty good Mega Millions jackpots then too. So all the other trends are basically, you know, in line with expectations, and we shouldn't be worried, and we should be gratified that the costs were cut enough to be able to actually increase the amount of profit that went back to the state. The lottery was able to transfer more than $280 million in what we call profit back to the state general fund.
Well, it looks like that recent lottery mania of that half billion dollar jackpot that got awarded to a single person certainly got everybody's attention, but it's still not like the multi-billion dollars as we've had in the past.
Yeah, yeah. When so you start talking with that many zeros, you and I get confused with our math there, Chris. And I'm as guilty as anybody, but. The scratch-off tickets continue to remain strong, and the lottery has also found over the last year that as they increase the price points, they're also able to increase sales and profits. You're going to see some pretty high price points on some new games. I think you're going to see a couple of $30 games continue to be rolled out. You're going to see a $50 price point game that's going to offer some pretty significant prizes that the lottery has some pretty high expectations for here in the current fiscal year. And that's a break from all those, you know, dollar tickets, the dollar scratch-off tickets that, you know, old guys like us remember from back in, you know, 1989, early 90s.